Hi, I'm Mary.
And I'm Christy.
And we're angel investors in Budapest, working together on FinTech Factory, an early-stage fintech investment fund backed by MKB Bank.
Each month, we get together to talk about investments and innovation in the financial sector and beyond with experts from around the world. Gerno Schwentner is the co-founder of WeGrow, an Amsterdam-based internationalization service focused on growing startups and scale-ups in Europe and the USA. WeGrow is helping companies such as WeTransfer, United Wardrobe, Channel B, Honeypot, and HelloPrint enter markets in both strategic and hands-on ways. Gerno was the VP Marketing and International Country Manager of Travelbird, Managing Director of News Travel, and built up a venture builder for an Austrian media company. Welcome, Gernot. It's great to have you in our show.
Hey, welcome. Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, so can you tell me a little bit more about your business, WeGrow International, and what you do?
Yeah, we basically what we do and what our moonshot and mission is, we want to help 100,000 founders with their international growth. We're already pretty good. We're getting there. we're close to, I think, almost 1,000 founders that we have impacted in the last three to four years. What we actually really do is we help them figure out the struggles of international expansion and growth, because all the people we work with and have on a team, we've seen that firsthand. It's not an easy task. It adds a lot of complexity. So we help them answering questions like, which market should you actually really go to? And which markets make sense? How do you go there? How do you win there? How do you build up your organization? What's a good go-to-market plan? And I think very important, how do you execute that well and capture it in playbooks, find the right talents, find right capital? So we also help on that side and make them successful in new markets and growth. And I think that's essential for every startup, and especially once they start scaling, because otherwise they won't be successful.
Yeah, definitely. International expansion is definitely one of the biggest hurdles for startups that are looking to scale. But where is the idea coming from? Like, how did you start up this business?
It's very experience driven. So both me and my co-founder, is French originally, and I'm Austrian, German speaking. And we worked with different startups and scale-ups, and we always saw this international expansion is quite tricky. So I once worked for a company where we expanded in 12 new markets at the same time. We were then active in 17 markets in total. And fast forward a couple of months later, we had to close half of the markets and kick 200 people out from one day to another. And this was kind of the birthplace where both me and my co-founder said, like, yeah, this shouldn't happen to other founders. So let's help them not making the same mistakes, share our experience, our know-how, our network, our learnings, and hopefully that drives the growth of new innovation and innovative startups that might disrupt the market and lead to a lot of new jobs, a lot of new ideas, and maybe they might change the world in the future, who knows? But let's help them.
Yeah, I mean, this is just, it's such an important, critical topic, especially in Europe, and especially, you know, we see this a lot in Hungarian startups as well. I mean, you know, you start a company here, you have to kind of be thinking global from day one, or else it's not going to be a scalable, you know, sustainable business. You know, the market's not big enough. So what would you say are like the most common mistakes that you see founders making when they start to plan their international expansion?
Yeah, I love that question, Mary. I think lots of the startups either go too early or too late. So I think timing is of essence. Too early and without the right preparation. I think this is one of the biggest mistakes. So we often, and that sounds a bit cocky now, but we sometimes even send startups home or tell them, like, let's not work together, you're not ready. And basically what we do then is we save them millions because they would start expanding, but they are not ready as a team. They don't have the right product market fit. And yet at the same time, if you're too late, well, then the market is gone, right? Or there are competitors already, then the market is too saturated. So I think timing is one of the most important things, together with really good preparation. So I'm a founder myself, right? So I love to jump into execution mode. I'm already there in my mind. I want to do things and just go, go, go. So I understand every founder who wants to really fast launch new markets one after the other, but it's good to take the right steps. So know where you go, understand that, and then make a good plan and then start executing.
Yeah, I think that's really good points. Have you found that the startups that you tell, you know, you're too early or go back and, you know, do some homework first, do they actually listen to you or do they just try to stubbornly forge ahead with other partners?
No, typically they listen to us and, you know, we give them, we coach them a little bit and tell them if they're too early stage, give them kind of a manual or a framework, what they still need to do in terms of organizational readiness or product market fit, get a bit of traction. And in parallel, I think they can start experimenting with new markets, but de-risk it. Let's not deploy, you know, a lot of money on it, but start gathering data, set up smart experiments. Those are the things that you can do. Maybe go there for a couple of days and understand really the what happens in a city or in a market and soak it up. And then based on that, those early insights, half a year later, come up with the expansion.
And when it comes to like market expansion, so what's the best approach? Like, should they go to one country or should they go to multiple countries at the same time?
Well, it really depends. This is a classic. It depends on, for some companies, it makes really sense to scale super fast. If it's high competition, I mean, you see this at the moment with all like those fast delivery startups that expanding all over Europe and the world, right? It's a very competitive space. So there are competitors out there. Entry hurdles are maybe a bit lower or all of them have a lot of funding. So it's a speed game. So then you need to expand to multiple markets probably at the same time. But I've been there. So I've been in a company where we've done that and it adds a lot of stress, noise and complexity, obviously, to you as a company. Then it's good that you have the right experienced people on board. For other startups and scale-ups, it mostly makes sense to start with one market first, to learn from that. So if I put myself in the Hungarian ecosystem, it can make sense to start with one of the European markets first. Maybe you want to go to the US directly if there are chance to, but it can also make sense to start with one market first, test it, learn from it, incorporate that in your playbooks. And then with all those learnings, the next market will be easier and the one afterwards will be easier, etc. And coming also on a funding level, I think it gives investors quite some confidence if you can showcase that you are successful in besides your home market, so in a new market, and can show first traction. So if you want to do this in 5 markets at the same time, probably you don't have all the resources yet on board. So where do you want to make impact is the question here.
Yeah, that's also really good points. And I think investors must love you for their portfolio in terms of de-risking and sort of, you know, getting these companies to be a little bit more realistic maybe with some of their plans. But you touched on an interesting point that I wanted to ask you about because you're focusing mainly in Europe. I mean, you're European, your co-founder is also European, but I know you have a worldwide network. But this is something we see a lot too. A lot of companies, there's kind of, I guess, maybe 2 schools of thought on this. Like one is that, okay, let's expand first to a nearby country because it's going to be easier for some, you know, geographically closer, maybe culturally as well. But then others think, well, it's equally difficult, you could say, to localize and set up in a new market. Why not pick a new market that's going like the US, you know, which is a very popular one because it's huge and it's going to be much more lucrative potentially. I know your answer will probably be it depends, but if you were leaning one way or the other, what would you say to that question?
Speaking from experience, you know, there's going to the US immediately can make sense. I know a few companies were successful with that they just took the risk. And then typically it helps if you have backup also from a US investor. And very fast, maybe the investor that you have on board has close ties with another one in the US and can help you to really land and expand. And you need deep pockets to make that happen, right? Europe is a fantastic place if you understand it. So you touched upon it. It's highly fragmented. If you win a couple of European markets, the big ones, namely German-speaking DACH area, so Germany, Austria, Switzerland, France, the UK, maybe the Nordics as such, then you actually have quite a competitive advantage versus maybe US companies coming to Europe. Or you might have a very good exit partner than someone that might buy your company at a later point in the life cycle. So being a European, I think we all have that somehow ingrained that we are multinational, or that it's easier for us to understand different cultures. That is something that you can leverage actually and build upon that. So I would lean mostly towards that because it's also easier to access.
Mm-hmm. So we talked about a couple different things that you mentioned, you know, elements or factors that you look at when evaluating kind of the access plan for a company, like their organizational readiness, their product market fit at home. Do you have like a perfect recipe or some kind of a checklist that you go through? How does a company know when they're ready, or what advice could you give to founders who are considering a move abroad?
Yeah, there's a good checklist on it. That sounds a bit cheesy now, but you actually can check that out on our homepage.
I set you up good for that one, right?
Yeah, thanks. I was just hanging there. WeGrow.company, we have an international growth checklist. So this can really help to think it through. We typically look at things that are related to the product as such, to the commercials. How good is the traction? How is the team structured, and what kind of expertise and seniority do you have on the team, the culture as such, and also the strategy and financials, obviously. So what's in place, how much money would you need, and do you already have any plans for that? So it's good to walk through those things. We typically evaluate companies on that kind of topics. We call it a growth readiness check, and we benchmark that versus the last 100, 150 projects that we did. And that allows us to identify all the gaps that they still have to fill before starting actually to expand. So we're trying to narrow down the big topics. Can be on a product level, you know, like things that are hard-coded in currencies or something. I mean, that happened. We've seen that in the past. Or commercial teams that the sales funnel is not totally clear, or the target personas are not yet clear, or the business model is not clear. Then let's fix those before really scaling.
Mm-hmm. So you've worked with many different startups from all over Europe. So I was just wondering, do you see any difference in attitude, courage, or maybe experience between startups from different countries?
Definitely. So for me, this is one of the most fascinating parts of my job, that I can work with a lot of European and also US startups and learn from those different viewpoints and mentalities. Also, our company is fully international. I think we're 10 different nationalities, or 11 in our core team. And you see different behavior for that. Often bigger markets like UK, like Germany, like France, they tend to actually expand too late. That sounds a bit paradox, but they have such a big home market, right? At the beginning, the same goes for the US, obviously, or some Asian markets. So the urge to go abroad is not that high versus a country like the Netherlands, like maybe Denmark, maybe like Hungary, right? So those companies that started there, they need to internationalize way earlier. So they have that, I think you said it in the intro, they do this way earlier than other companies, and they might be even more successful with that, because it's a skill that you need to learn as an organization. And the sooner you do it, if timing is right, the better you will do it on the long run.
And how do you select the startups that you work with? Like, do you have any preferred industries, or it doesn't matter when it comes to market expansion?
No, it doesn't really matter. I mean, we all have our kind of expertise. It could be more B2B, it could be more SaaS, could be more e-commerce, direct to consumer. But we're pretty agnostic in a way that we have, next to our core team, 100 experts all over the world with different expertise. Can be in health tech, can be in deep tech, can be in HR tech, etc. You name it, fintech, mobility, we do a lot, for example. But the questions are always the same, you know, and the struggles are always the same. So how do we select them? We need to have confidence in them and trust, and also, you know, a certain mentality or humbleness from the founders or the founding team, that they're open for external advice.
Let's imagine that you have your company. So what's the first thing you do with them?
Well, we do intakes. We talk. We want to understand where basically the pain points are. We look at the data, so what they've already assembled. And depending on the question, we will start reaching out to markets, people in the markets, to first get a feeling where they want to go, what is the situation there, how are they perceived, is there a big market for it, and then give first results back already to see, do we need to change any markets, yes, no, or can we research the ones that we thought that makes sense?
So you come from the startup. So you've been part of different startups, founded some yourself. And now with WeGrow, you work with a lot of startups, but it's a bit more of an agency model. But I know that you guys are also putting a lot of effort into scaling yourself. Maybe you could speak a little bit about that. How are you productizing some of your services?
Yeah, I think we chose a quite difficult proposition to scale, right? So agency model, advisory model is less on a product level. So obviously we also invest a lot in our tools and methodology. I think this is core, our IP. And the people that we have on board, I think, and together with the network, those are the assets that we have. We try to put that all in tools so that it's shareable, and potentially later also that we can create a platform out of it or make it easily accessible. What gives us quite some scalability is that we also developed some know-how programs where we share our learnings for different ecosystems. So that makes it broader accessible. We did this recently in Austria, for example, where we had 10 startups and then we coached them through a program together with some mentors. And afterwards, they really knew how to launch internationally, where to go and how to do it. So this obviously helps us.
So you mentioned that it's 11 of you in the company. So are you all located in Amsterdam or are you all over the place?
So our core team is located mostly in the Netherlands and then in Germany and in France. So those are our three, this kind of the magic triangle, as we call it. So Amsterdam, Berlin, Paris. And with that, we can always branch out towards the UK, where we have experts, towards the rest of Europe, be it east or south or north. And some of the experts then in our network are in other markets outside of Europe if we need them.
So since this is a fintech podcast, I was wondering if you can tell us about a fintech project or company that you've worked with and share some story about your experience in that space.
Yeah, I think fintech is super interesting because, I mean, you see a lot of movements in the market. I think payment behavior is also different in different markets. So we did a while back, one of the projects that comes to mind, we helped to prepare for the Series B. For one of those companies, it's in B2B lending space, so not towards consumers, but towards businesses. Very interesting, high potential. And for example, what we did back then there was to look at all the European landscape, what kind of competitors are there, where would it make sense to launch, how does it make sense to launch there, what is the competitive advantage, or on a product level, what do they still have to develop for certain markets too. And I think this is always the aim, to get a full product market fit in new markets and to be able to scale fast.
Where was the company located? Which country?
This one was in Netherlands.
Okay. And you were helping them prepare for an investment round?
For an investment round, but we prepared basically the whole expansion plan. Mm-hmm. And this was part then of the rationale towards the investors, which markets they could go, why they would need, how much investment. And they also wanted to see a proper roadmap for that.
And I guess they got the funding and now they're going full steam ahead.
Yep. Yes, exactly.
Yeah. So I wanted to ask you about the past year. You published a white paper on growing your international markets in times of crisis. So can you tell us a bit more about your findings?
I think what's super interesting in this regard is when we looked and we reached out to quite some founders in Europe, I think a couple of hundred founders, and we got quite some good responses on that. What we were interested was actually how those market disruptions, if you want to call it like that, right? COVID or other things that have really big impact, how do they influence international expanding companies? How does that build up resilience? And one of the big findings was actually that the companies that were already in a couple of European markets or international markets present, they all gave back that this was a huge advantage for them during such a market disruption, because suddenly that there was a risk spreading. Some markets underperformed, others were already in the green again, and that could help them actually to survive properly and to keep the traction. And it built up quite some resilience for them as an organization, because if they were successful during those times where maybe communication had to change, where they couldn't travel anymore but still have traction in those markets, I think if you find those companies, then even in easier market times, they will just accelerate and skyrocket. Mm-hmm. So this is actually was good that they were internationally active already. What we also saw, and this is maybe a funny story, some companies used that time when they in their home market had a bit of a downtime and they had enough funding. They used that to prepare and launch in new markets. It's a bit counterintuitively, but we actually helped one of those companies. They said, well, now we have the resources and the time. There's nothing we can do in our home market. It will come back when it comes back. But in the meantime, let's make use of the time and prepare for it. Then once borders opened up again and the climate got better, they were ready to launch and did that.
Yeah, I love that too. I think we've seen the world get a bit smaller during this whole time. And actually, you can really make a lot of progress. It's almost, you know, with constraints, okay, I can't travel, but what can I do? Well, you can actually go to a meetup in any country at any time because everything's online. So it's really kind of opened up accessibility. And I've experienced that myself too. I mean, last year, I feel like I spent more time talking to people outside of Hungary than inside, just because, you know, everybody was working from home. And yeah, it was kind of interesting just to, you know, I, for example, you know, started working with a lot of different Canadian organizations for a different project. And I feel like they've become my close friends and I've never met them in person. I feel like my brother, who's a video gamer and just has this whole world of people that he's never met, but it's possible.
So we had the same, you know, like we helped a US-based company, they're from California, and they struggled quite a lot in the French market because they couldn't fly over anymore. That is a different example where we saw that how important it is actually to have boots on the ground. So we then worked together with people there from our team to keep France basically alive and growing because they didn't have a chance to fly over, right? So we jumped in and kept that market growing with our resources that were already in Paris. So basically, we were kind of the extended workbench for them on the ground in Paris, where they could still, you know, meet for coffee or sometimes also be remote, but mostly then meet with people and be on the ground and talk with them. So that's another good example what suddenly such a shift produces in terms of opportunities.
Do you think that's partially because of just the culture in the French market? I mean, people like to get together and speak French. And I don't know if it was a language barrier or just a time zone or just you think the actual physical presence was important?
I think all together. But I mean, a market like the French market, and my co-founder is a native French, would be the person to ask there as well. But I think it's a market where you have to be present. Mm-hmm. So it's I think, one of the most difficult European markets. Unless you're French, well, then you have an advantage. But if you're non-French, then it's something that is a bit harder to crack unless you're there with the right people. And you definitely always have to understand the local culture, product market fit. And it is very centralized in Paris. So if you're there, you will reach a lot of people and you definitely have to be recommended. So this is something I always took away from the French market. If you want to have a meeting with someone, first you need to be recommended by three of the peers. Otherwise, people will not take that meeting or will not take you that serious. Hmm. So that all speaks for an on-site approach or really focused with French people to make it successful long-term.
I like that as a rule of thumb. Always got to get three intros before you can get somewhere.
So Gernot, any final thoughts or words of inspiration for companies thinking about expanding?
Yeah, I think for all the, you know, like I talked a lot about risks or, you know, expansion and what can go wrong. But in essence, I think, and this goes for any corporate innovator, but also for any founder, you know, like just do it. But do it in the right way. There are people out there that can help you. I myself work with or have worked in my career with different coaches that helped me on a personal level or on a professional level. So I always go and look for people that can help me with things. And in this spirit, we are here to help and support. That's where we have fun with. There are other parties or other people out there that can do the same and that shouldn't hold you back in any regard. I think that should be the spirit for growth.
Excellent.
Well, thank you so much, Gernot. It was great to have you in our show, and I think we covered a lot of things, and we could go on and on, but maybe we will continue next time. But thank you so much for taking the time and joining us.
Yeah, likewise. Thanks for having me.
I hope to meet you. If you come to Budapest, we can meet up in person.
Let's do that, definitely. And the same goes if you're in Amsterdam, obviously. So lovely talking, and all the best.
All right. Thank you. Take care.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening.
Tune in next month for another episode of Beyond FinTech, where we discuss the latest trends in investing and innovation in the financial sector and beyond.